Another week of my unconventional life. This is getting harder to do by the week. But life is hard sometimes, I guess. Especially with the emotions of impending parenthood. I don't know. It's my unconventional life. Or is it? I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately. To front only the essential facts of life. And see if I could not learn what it had to teach. And not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness, and this is my unconventional life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? So this is how the podcast works. As I go through the week, I write down when I have thoughts or events happen that I feel are relevant to my journey. And then at the end of the week, I try to write a monologue from them. This is hard because my emotions have often changed and ebbed and flowed so much that my mood as I write is often so different from that of what I'm writing. But be that as it may, I'll continue. Although there has been no word from anyone about whether I should continue this, and to be honest, I'm having such a hard time emotionally at the moment that, I don't know, maybe it's best to step away for a time. Or forever. Who knows? To everything there is a season. That's from the Bible. And I went to church this week, which was a positive. It's not some question of faith that I'm having or a struggle to find a religious identity. It's just a positive place for me to feel happiness. They had a baptism as part of the service, which was really nice. And a little service for the kids too, where they talked about how you don't choose your family, God chooses them for you. Which was an interesting idea. It also occurred to me that the idea they promote of Jesus being perfect perhaps creates some of the self-judgment and neuroses in ourselves. I mean, the idea that we are all imperfect could perhaps be seen as a self-defeating idea, versus the idea that we are actually all perfect already, just fighting our own existential battle as best we can. The vicar also talked openly and vehemently about the current government for its brazenly racist policies. And that felt good too, to hear someone speaking about something so positive, so passionately. I didn't do the benediction at the end of the service, you know, the bit where they go up to get their holy wafers and say, I'm happy to be a Christian or something like that. I kind of paraphrasing, but I didn't go because I felt like that would be a lie. Going to church wasn't. Because I am open to hearing about Christianity. With a mind to converting? I mean, if they can convince me, sure. But that's not why I'm going. I do believe in the ideals that Christianity seems to promote. I say seems because I don't know that much about it yet. And Christianity is far too broad a term since there are so many varying ideas of what that means. The church I went to, for example, is extremely gay-friendly and actually has specific classes about homosexuality and its acceptance in, and maybe even encouragement through, the Bible. I wonder how they feel about polyamory. Of course, there is something to me searching for some peace right now. I have a note on my phone every day that I'm supposed to meditate at 9 a.m. Do you know how many times I've actually done it over the last 2 months since I've had the note on my phone? Not once. I was doing it a lot in 2016 when I felt most at peace and content in my life. I was working on being a lot more mindful then too. But I also didn't have anyone else's happiness arguably in conflict with mine at the time either. Nonetheless, is there anything I can apply from that time to now? I don't know. I'm in a totally different situation now. I think a lot of my anxiety comes from being so vulnerable now. My mind often races to worst case scenarios. And not for nothing, sometimes other people doing the same thing adds to the strength and power of those thoughts. Harry stopping me seeing our daughter, for example. Or becoming so angry that she can't see me at all and it completely messing our daughter up mentally. So many of the things that I wanted to avoid by having a parenting partnership instead of a traditional romantic relationship. And this is how the world is going to see my attempt at a non-traditional parenting agreement. But these are all possibilities, not facts. And if I take the stoic, deterministic viewpoint, if any of them happen, well, they happen. And I can't control that. I can't control someone else's reactions or their feelings. What's more, there are other just as likely options. That we'll figure it out. That we are mature adults who can, at worst, be cordial and provide a healthy environment for the betterment of our child. I wanted to quote something from the book I'm reading right now by Derren Brown. About the anxiety from the fear of loss of control in your life. It talks about how projecting our needs, telling our internal stories, creates the tyranny of expectations, of trying to control another person to fit our needs, to be the perfect, ideal person that we think they are, or should be at least. He writes, "These forms of control will of course come from both sides. They are part of the natural dynamic when two partners grow from the fantasy portion of seeing each other in magical terms to a real-life appreciation of the other. The fear of being overwhelmed can lend itself to as many control games as that of abandonment, as an avoidant partner unconsciously arranges aspects of the partnership to keep the other safely at bay. There is no clear right and wrong, no worthwhile question of blame, just the intricate dance of two human beings living out their own internalized scripts." As I'm reading that now, though, I don't know how much applies to me or my situation with Eri right now. I think that's part of my anxiety, too, that I just feel so confused so often. Ultimately, though, it comes back to what I said before. I can't control Eri's emotions or reactions. Only my own. I can only be my most honest, kind, and authentic self. Even if sometimes, oftentimes, honesty and kindness conflict. I'm at cool as fuck again this week. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, or for the whole time, you might remember that she was the last girl that I dated before I became monogamous with Eri, and barely seen her since then. But we managed to get a coffee this week and catch up on things. She's really finding her groove in the co-parenting arrangement that she has with her daughter's father, largely by giving up on holding on to certain expectations and accepting him for the person he is. And this certainly speaks to the portion of the book that I mentioned above. And it was very encouraging. She also told me that she identified with a lot of the hormonal feelings that Eri's been having recently too. She actually experienced them way worse than Eri did, in fact. So it made a lot more sense to me and put my mind at rest somewhat and reinforced what other people have told me too. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it's what Eri has told me too, at least in general terms. I don't know why I had to hear it from so many other people before it sank in, but that's how it happens sometimes. I guess because from other people, that's the only information that they give you. But from the person you're so intimately involved with, it can be clouded by other things that they say and other emotions. Eri and I still haven't come to any definitive agreement to any of the changes suggested to our contract. That's largely on me for not getting back with my suggestions. Certainly neither of us want to go to court or pay a ton of money to get professionals involved. We want to settle these things amicably, either between ourselves or with the help of the resolution panel that we suggested within the contract. And I think ultimately we will. Therapy this week was positive, if difficult. I think we both left feeling more comfortable about things, having been able to say some difficult things and to be heard saying them. The truth sets you free is a hard cliche sometimes. I don't know. I just only want to feel positive, loving feelings. But maybe in relationships like this, that's impossible all the time. Who knows? This is the last part of my interview then with Les. The one thing he said about life that I remember distinctly from the interview is that life is uncertain, unexpected. It doesn't work out the way that you expect. Boy, is that the truth.
You're about to be a father.
Hmm.
What hopes do you have for your child?
It's interesting you ask me that because we watched a movie the other day called The Christmas Prince, and it is a movie that's on Netflix and it's aimed for sort of 11 to 13 year old girls. It's very sort of obvious about falling in love. And
most Christmas
the rest of your
movies
life
are,
together.
I
yeah,
know.
Right.
The wife runs me over the top with Christmas movies every year.
So I watched it, and, you know, before I knew I was going to be a dad, I watched it and gone, okay, it's kind of an unrealistic expectation to hope everybody falls in love and spends their rest of their life with one person. But it was kind of vague notion. I watched it this time and I was like, wow, my daughter is going to see all of this and get ingrained with this notion that if she doesn't find Prince Charming and spend her life with this person, somehow her life's going to be a failure or disappointing to her. So what I want to provide my daughter is the ability to know there are other options in terms of loving people.
Right. You know, but now you don't want to smart her up too soon.
Right.
Because you know what? The one thing that I think a lot of the young people miss today that I thank God I didn't miss was my naive childhood.
Yeah.
When I could be a child, you know. Now these children, I mean, with the internet and all the social media, I mean, my 12-year-old grandson has a phone that's smarter than I am, for Christ's sake, right?
Right.
If we're talking about necessities, then a huge portion of all the modern day things can be done away with because they're not necessary, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm
they're conveniences,
right? And I wouldn't say to her when she's 5 years old, just so you know, monogamy doesn't work. That'd be crazy,
right?
Yeah.
At five, she wouldn't even know what the word meant. Well, right. she could Google it,
yeah.
Right?
Listen, I'm gonna just give her my viewpoints when she comes to me and she asks questions.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to... You sort of thrust any kind of opinion on someone, 9 times out of 10, they kind of reject that because you feel like... They feel like you're trying to force it upon them. But having said that, it's interesting because at the same time, the same day we watched that movie, we also talked about how there are some people that don't believe in telling their kids that Santa Claus is a real thing. And I think there's nothing wrong with like having that short period in their life.
You know what? I wouldn't have wanted to miss that for the world.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to take that away from a child, you know?
Right.
There's the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy. And
what's the harm? And here's the thing. When you get to the age that you realize, okay, Santa Claus isn't real, you don't go, my parents lie to me and I can't trust anything they say.
No, you don't.
You accept it's just, you know, a tradition, et cetera, and that's part of becoming an adult. The problem I have with the notion of Prince Charming and lifelong monogamy forever after is that when or if you ever get to the stage that you go, oh Christ, this isn't really working out, there's a lot of emotional stress that goes with that.
Sure.
Like if I don't know if anyone could have told me or if I'd have figured it out when I was 18 or if it was accepted within culture when I was 18 years old that yes, lifelong monogamy, if that's truly what you want and you find someone else that feels the exact same way and you're willing to make the sacrifices to make that work, then go for it. But there are so many other more tenable options out there which are just as fulfilling. I wouldn't have arguably made a lot of the choices that I made in my life, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, I think if we look back, you know, when you say, I wouldn't have changed a thing, we're all lying because there would be things, you know, I would have gotten rich instead of happy or something, right? I mean, yeah, because there are things. Nobody's had that perfect life, and I think that what we have to understand, too, with children is our children aren't us.
Yeah.
I'm blessed to know that my mother and father, and the older I get, my father passed away in, 82 or 83. Mm. My mother in Thanksgiving of 2000. And yet, I realize more every day how blessed I was to have them, because they allowed me to dream for myself. I didn't have to be a bricklayer like my father, or, you know, it wasn't something, and they adjust to the things that I liked, right?
Yeah.
And the one thing I can say for sure, thank God, maybe, that none of my children have followed my path, right? And they're closer to normal than their father would have ever been.
Well, that's it. And when you ask me what I want to bring to my daughter, I think that's it. That's one of the core things, is to give her the freedom to
be herself.
Be herself and pursue whatever it is she wants, and I'll be there to support her. And that's one of the reasons I want to have kids, because I felt I was given that by my parents. I had a wonderful childhood, very supportive childhood, and I want to be there for her to do the same thing, you know?
Well, I'm sure when you decided, hey, I'm going over to Cincinnati, Ohio with Les Thatcher and be a wrestler, your mom said, well, sure, son, go right on. I think it's a great idea. Mm. She's probably thinking, oh, my God. Right?
Yeah.
You're right. Are you ribbing me?
I don't know. I think they were all full on board. The only thing they ever cared about was I happy? That was literally...
Well, I look back... And I remember my parents taking me to the Greyhound station the day that I went to Boston to start my wrestling career. And I look back at it, and as calm as they were, there still had to be questions. I was getting on a Greyhound bus going 1,000 miles from home. And the only time I'd ever been away from home was at Boy Scout camp in the past, right?
Yeah.
I was going to live in a city they'd never been to.
Right.
And most of my friends were going to be doctors or airplane pilots or... And he's going to be what again? A professional wrestler? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, so I'm sure they were apprehensive, but they were also, they didn't say, oh my God, you're going to be a wrestler. They, you know, they were accepting. And I think if I could duplicate anything from my parents, that would be the accepting of whatever my children, short of being mass murderers or something, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny you say that. There's a book called The Five Love Languages, and it speaks about how everybody has a love language, which is how we express and want to receive love. And a lot of it comes from our childhood and how we were shown love or weren't shown love from our parents.
Right.
And the five love languages are words of affirmation, so being told that you're loved or that you're appreciated, acts of service, doing things for people. Physical touch is another one, and then there's two more as well which escape my mind at the moment. But oftentimes what it says is the problems in relationships is one person has one love language and someone has the opposite love language. So someone might need quality time with somebody and the other person needs gifts, for example. And
right.
So one person gives gifts and this other person doesn't feel loved, and they don't understand why, you know. And so Eri and I have been reading the book, and her love languages are acts of service, which is fine because I'm like my dad. I love helping out around the house, etc., etc. And her other one is words of affirmation, which I'm okay with. But sometimes when I'm stressed and I'm on the road and she's upset, it's hard for me to sort of just go tell her what she needs to hear rather than trying to fix the problem, you know.
Right.
So I'm trying to find what my love languages are, and when I think back to my childhood and how I felt love, it was when my parents accepted me and said, you do what you want as long as you're happy. And so when someone does that to me, that's when I feel love. Now, I don't know if that's one of the love languages or not, but that's how I feel love.
Right.
You know, that seems to make sense.
Well, I think that's to do with more in your life than just what your parents accept. I think, you know, there are times when someone within our industry tells me that I've done good, someone that I don't owe anything to, or they're not trying to get something out of me, right?
Yeah.
That's a feel-good, you know? That's,
right.
That's a feel-good. You know, whatever we're doing, whatever you're doing or I'm doing or anybody's doing, is to gain acceptance to some degree from some quarter. Right.
Yeah.
You know, don't you? I mean.
Yeah, quite potentially. And that's why, you know.
I mean, you're doing a job now that I haven't heard anyone say, Nigel McGuinness can't do this or he's not good at it. Right. And I even feel good about that, indirectly because I had something to do with that, yeah. right? So even on a day that I may have a downer for some reason, if somebody tells me, boy, that guy Nigel, he's did this or done that, or that picks me up a little bit, you know? Well, you know, my dad was a very quiet person. He was not aggressive or outgoing.
Yeah.
And it probably took me, I'm not sure exactly when the light bulb went off. I said, my father loves me, right? Mm. Because he wasn't a hugger or wasn't a verbal person.
So he never said, I love you.
I don't remember. He must have. I think as we got older, but then I think that's part of I see in myself that I saw in my father as he got older, I've become more sentimental. Mm. You know, something, I can watch something on television that will bring tears in my eyes because I feel it. Right. Where I might have seen it when I was your age, but now I understand it because I've felt it myself. Am I making sense?
Sure. Empathy for sure.
Yeah. You know, right. And cynical, you know, the saying is, as you get older, you get knowledge. That's why you get cynical. But there's a lot of truth to that as well. Right.
Yeah.
But I think the main thing with your daughter is she's going to make these changes for herself at some point. And at different times, maybe than you or I made the same changes. But the point is, you kind of have to let her do that, right? I mean, you want to be there if she needs you. You want to offer advice if she asks. But she has to grab the rudder of her boat and steer it through life.
Right.
You can't do that for her. Or at least you can do it, but it may stunt her growth or put her on a path that she doesn't necessarily want to be on.
Right. And we said it earlier today, I feel very confident in being a parent, 100%.
Right.
My issues, my concerns are being a partner, you know. I mean, partner, not quite so much, but a romantic partner.
I believe that when it's time for that in your life, that you'll know it and you will be that person. Let me say this, is you admire the female image, you admire a good physique, you admire a good face. When I was 41, and comparing that to you being 41, you're probably at the height of your sexual awareness and of the whole sexual thing should probably be at its zenith right about now. I'm not trying to scare you into tomorrow you're going to be impotent or anything. That wasn't the point. But for me now, I can look at a beautiful woman and not necessarily want her, right? Just understand. Well, in part two, because I worked in the gym business, I've been a personal trainer, I've been an athlete, so I understand, you know, things like that too. I can look at a Playboy centerfold and say, her calves aren't symmetric with her thighs, and somebody will say, what's wrong with him, right? But that's just been a part of my life for so long, you know.
But here's an interesting question. I have a friend down in Florida he's in his 60s now. And he said to me once, he said, the very difficult thing about growing older is that you grow older, but the girls you're attracted to stay the same age.
Yeah, isn't that awful?
But you still have an appreciation for older women as well, right?
Yes. Well, you know, the crazy thing is, a well-preserved older woman, I mean, physical is physical, right? I mean, you can look at a woman and say, well, God, she's got a great rear end, or God, she, you know, this and that, at any age. But I think as you get older, you're looking for more, right? In other words, I can look at a hot 21-year-old now, and the minute she talk to her in 5 minutes, and my desire for her physically is dissipated at a rapid rate, right?
Right.
Because we have nothing in common other than the fact that I find her physically attractive.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think as you get older, there's more to it as well. You add... You know, it was a great, boy, she got a great set of lungs, right? That was when you were 18, right? Or 17.
Right. But again, isn't that looking at everything within a monogamous scheme in the sense of, let's say the girl who's in her 20s has the wonderful physique or whatever else, but you don't connect on an emotional level. You could still connect in an intimate sense in a positive manner, right? Like, like when you were 41 and the girl was 19, you still connected in an intimate way. Well,
now, let me ask you, has this ever happened to you? Because it's happened to me several times over my lifetime, is you will be physically attracted to someone. You can be introduced to that someone. and there's a spark. But the moment the two of you are left alone, not necessarily, I don't mean in bed alone, but just to entertain one another, like go to a movie and to dinner, you're stuck. You really don't, you're having a hard time make conversation.
Sometimes.
I mean, I don't mean it happens all the time, but it does happen, right?
To some extent. Here's another question, though. Has it ever been a case where you met someone or introduced to someone and you weren't physically attracted to them, and then after you got to know them, you then became sexually attracted to them? It has? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can look back at a couple of former girlfriends that probably, if I showed you a picture, if I had a picture to show you, if I showed you a picture, you'd say, oh, I don't think she's all that hot, right, or that attractive. I've seen you with more attractive women or something, but there was something that sparked my interest, right, opposed to the size of her breast or the shape of her butt, right? I mean, it was her personality or whatever. You know, the joke is, Nigel, I'm going to fix you up with what she looked like. Well, she got a great personality. Well, you know right away that you don't want to go out with her, right?
Yeah.
But I've met some amazing women that their sexiness or their attractiveness wasn't necessarily physical. It was their mind or their actions or their personality.
And if that's the case, and you can be attracted to some women because of the way they look and some women because of who they are, and every woman for a combination of each, you can make a very good argument. And if that's the case, maybe it's better to be non-monogamous where you can experience all these great relationships at the same time.
Well, you know, yeah. You know, to me right now, I mean, I've experienced relationships with a lot of different women over the years. I mean, I've been married 3 times, in part because of the wrestling business, in part because I must be a hard guy to get along with, or I picked the wrong mates or whatever. But the point is, you know, now it's not for me a physical thing. It's a respect thing. It's it's emotional. But it's not, I'm going to jump your bones. I can't wait to get home to jump your bones, right?
Yeah.
It's a whole different ballgame. And that's going to change every day.
Right.
Especially for you from this point forward.
Yeah.
You know? And what you're telling me today, you may not believe the same thing this time next year.
Yeah.
We'll have to sit down and do this again. Mark this date down.
All right. There we are. It's a date. This time next year, we'll see.
But you know, that's the other thing, too. The one thing that our business has given us is a chance to see places and meet a huge cross-section of people from all walks of life. You know, you've got a college education, and I don't, but I think the education we both have from the business we've spent the majority of our adult lives in has been as good as any Harvard degree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah, in terms of common sense, in terms of the important things you need to learn in life, for sure.
There's a friend of mine who says, you're street smart. And I said, yeah, well, I wish I were financially smart, but I haven't made that.
Can't take it with you, though, can you?
No.
Right? No, you certainly can't.
Well, don't worry. I have no excess baggage. I have nothing to take with me.
Right. Well, maybe this time next year when we meet again, you will do.
Maybe my things gosh, will be different. Maybe if Publishers Clearinghouse comes through or the lottery. I'm not sure.
You never know what's around the corner. That's what you said, right? Life's unpredictable.
You know.
One thing that isn't unpredictable is our friendship, and I'll always be appreciative for that, Liz. You know,
like I said, if you need somebody to adopt you as a surrogate father, I'm your guy. I love you, and I'm proud of everything I've been involved in with you, and proud of you.
Thank you. I love you too. That means a lot to me. I appreciate that.
Wow, we're getting sentimental here, aren't we?
And a Merry Christmas, one and all.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
All right. Thanks very much, Mike.
My pleasure, my friend.
All right. That was my friend Les. I have been blessed in my life to have known so much love, so many friendships. Next week, no more interviews again. And who knows? Maybe no more podcasts. What a pathetic plea for acknowledgement. This certainly isn't my finest hour. I am flawed, and I don't mind admitting it. That's another week gone. What have I learnt, and what peace have I found? Cheers for taking the time to listen to the podcast. Drop me a line at myunconventionallife2016@gmail.com if you have comments or questions. And if you like the show and know someone else who might get something out of it, tell a friend. I will be back next week with a week's worth of thoughts and emotions and hopefully some joy. But until then, wherever you are and whoever you're with, try to be kind to others, but as much to yourself. We're all fighting our own battle. Lead with love.